Okay, ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. Our chairperson, Marvin Crist, is not able to make it, so I will be chairing the meeting. I'm Marcia McLean, and I'm the mayor of the city of Santa Clarita. May we have roll call, please?
Yes. Yes? Everyone can hear me? Yes. Okay, thank you. Okay, roll call. Chair Crist? Vice Chair McLean?
Here.
Director Barger? Director Pastrella? Director Lindenheim?
Here.
Director Mann? Director Caudell? Director Hofbauer?
Here.
Director Bishop?
Here.
Director Loa?
Here.
Director Keller? Director Newman? And the non-voting members, Director Nishadi and Director Aguilar. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next item.
Madam Chair, just to clarify for everyone in the audience today, we do not have a quorum of the NCTC body today. Our bylaws dictate that we have to have voting members from each member jurisdiction. So today, as we just went through roll call, Lancaster is not, Mr. Pastrella is now here. Okay. I'll add that. Thank you. So we are going to go through the agenda today. Just want to make sure everyone understands we can't take any action. So we can't vote on any items, but we will hear all the items today, and technically we can't even receive and file them by a vote, right? So we're just going to go through each item today and act like it's a normal board meeting, but we can't go to any action items. Chair McLean, Pledge of Allegiance.
Yes. Mr. Hofbauer, or Mayor Hofbauer, would you kindly lead us in the pledge?
Thank you. Face the flag. Put your hand over your heart and join with me. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. The consent calendar is next, and all items listed under the consent calendar are considered to be routine and may be enacted by one motion.
Yes.
Move the table.
Yes, so if there are any questions on the consent calendar, I could just very quickly, it's the minutes from the last board meeting of January 14th. And then also we have item 5, which is the update of the NCTC map and the table. So for those of you in the audience as well, all these documents are on the website. So we can go to regular item number 6 now.
Okay, I just want to make sure.
So no action.
There are no requests to speak on the consent calendar. Okay,
yeah.
Fine.
The speaker cards are on item 11. And again, yes, let me make that very quickly.
Six.
Yeah.
Right.
For those of you that would like to speak on any item, there are speaker cards in the back. If you could fill those out and bring them to me or the chair, we would appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. On item number 6, we have Metro North County Corridor Update. Metro Director Ara Najarian.
Should I use this, everyone? Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board, members of the public. My name's Ara Najarian, and I am representing the North County cities on the Metro Board. As an aside, I also sit on the MetroLink Board of Directors via my membership on the Metro Board. But I'm mainly going to focus on Metro. We'll touch on a few MetroLink items as we go forward. You know, the basic story about Metro is the same. It is a Los Angeles-centric organization, and it's mainly that way because the mayor of L.A. Has the deck stacked in his favor. I hope I'm not being too brutally honest with everyone, but that's just the way I am. So he has 4 votes on any issue. He is the rock star of Metro, and whenever he goes into a meeting or to discussions with staff or the CEO, what he says is listened to very carefully. There are a lot of huge projects going on in Los Angeles right now. A lot of them are geared towards opening before the 2028 Los Angeles Olympics. So there's a big push for those projects to go forward. And many of them, if not every single one of them, is within or touching the city of LA. That being said, it's my job to work hard to make sure that the North County's transportation needs are recognized and are met. We have a very special geographic limitation here. We've got a choke point like no other area, perhaps, in our entire Southern California region. I'm happy to say, I'm proud to say that you are also very strongly represented on the Metro Board by Supervisor Barger, building on the work that Supervisor Antonovich did for so many years. So we stick together whenever we can to make sure our voice is heard as loudly as possible. Well, what's going on? High-speed rail. The governor has been accused of misspeaking when he said high-speed rail is dead. We'll take him at his word for that. I think what he really meant to say is the vision, the early vision of high-speed rail, where you jump on the high-speed train at Los Angeles Union Station or even down in Orange County and zip to the Bay Area, is going to be modified somewhat. What they're looking at is that central Valley region, that's gonna have the high speed portion, but everything else is gonna be feeding into it. It's our hope that we are able to develop a lot of connectivity to a Palmdale location, which will hopefully at that point be the start of a high speed rail hub. We have made a motion, Supervisor Barger and myself, for the Metro Board to get back to us and tell us what is going on, what does this mean, what does this slight change of the vision of high-speed rail mean for our region. And what I hope it means is that we're going to get funding to complement our already existing rail service or develop something slightly newer from Los Angeles to the Palmdale area through, of course, the Antelope Valley. That's going to give us a lot greater connectivity and transportation options than we already have. And you're going to be hearing from Metro folks. I don't know if Jeanette Owens is here, but I know her. Oh, there's Jeanette. Hi. And we've got some MetroLink staff here to talk about it. It's really where we're focusing. This is our greatest opportunity for growth. There's still a lot of money in the books for high-speed rail, and we're more than happy to help that concept become a reality through building up our own connectivity from LA Union Station to Palmdale. Let's talk about the Measure M multi-year sub-regional program. In February, a Metro Board approved funding for several North County Measure M multi-year sub-regional programs, and we approved programming and we did some inter-program borrowing for nearly $38 million in the high-priority North County transportation projects. These are projects that you brought forward and that you brought to our attention. The last thing that we really want to do is have Metro headquarters dictate to this region what they want, because nobody knows this region better than all of you elected and non-elected on this board. And what it does is it represents great collaboration amongst you, and I think that's perhaps that natural cooperation that has been developing gave birth to this transportation group that we have before us. Most of the projects are active transportation projects, and that's still a darling of the transportation planners. Active means you're either walking, you're biking, you're taking some other mode rather than a vehicle. The transportation projects in the Lancaster and Santa Clarita areas. There are also several transit projects, primarily in Santa Clarita and Palmdale. And we are inter-program borrowing for some funding from our transit program for two critically needed highway projects that improve freeway ramps on the SR 138 and add capacity to the SR 14. Speaking of the SR 14, I don't need to talk to you about the bottleneck that bottlenecks, more than one, obviously, that we have here. This body earmarked $4 million in multi-year sub-regional highway program funds for the SR-14 improvements, and it is obviously one of the most congested highways in the entire county. Metro, Caltrans, and this body has held meetings to discuss what is needed on the SR-14. We have all met to identify locations on the SR-14 that are perceived to be the most congested, and Caltrans has committed to evaluating those locations and to validate the need for the highway improvements. Caltrans will finalize a needs assessment report and will prioritize the location on the SR-14 that is in the most need of the improvements by late May or early June, so just several weeks away. And after the report, all parties will reconvene to validate those findings and start the highway planning. One of the big things that came out of Metro in the last few months was congestion pricing. And what that means is that either by way of a cordon, a geographical border, or a corridor, or determined by vehicle miles traveled, that there will be a charge on those travelers, which will do two things. It'll generate some funds, but it'll also eliminate those drivers that do not need to be on the roadways during the peak congestion periods. And studies have shown that upwards of half the people on the roadways during rush hour do not need to be on the roadways, that they can reschedule those trips and help reduce and even out the flow of traffic. Now, one of the big problems is, especially for this region, is it fair by any means to impose a vehicle miles traveled charge to get into downtown? And obviously, some of the folks in this area have the longest commutes of any commuter in the region. I don't think it would be fair. So what we're talking about on the board is equity, fairness. We have to be fair to the residents and the commuters of this area and not charge them when they have no other alternative than getting on the roadways and driving, especially as Metrolink and other transit is not totally built out. At the same time, there's other regions of the county where equity means something else. Equity can mean financial equity, income equity. So there are directors representing, let's say, the mid-city or central city who feel that any charge is not going to be fair to those residents and those commuters because they don't have the income to pay that. In any event, the concept is in use in London. Most people say it's successful in London. The idea being that if you're going to get on the roadway and pay that fee, that you're going to have clear sailing the whole way. And in theory, that's the way it should work. Metro is going on a two-year investigation and report basis for this. So they're not jumping into it right away. We are definitely going to be looking to this board for their for your input as to what is going to be fair and how this thing should work. Metrolink, in 2017, along with Supervisor Barger, we made a motion to study ways to improve the Antelope Valley Line service between Burbank and Lancaster. And it is critical that we increase service on this line. This is really the only transit line serving the Antelope Valley, and we have to make improvements. What kind of improvements? Well, we're thinking about late evening service, service on weekends, additional off-peak service, and that's what I hear the most from Chairwoman McLean, is that when you go to your SCAG meetings, you're left in this dead zone at 12:30, 1 o'clock. There's no way to get back to this region from downtown, and those are valid issues that you raise, and you raise often. I like to call you the motivator for Metrolink, because you always highlight this, and not many elected officials appreciate the lack of service, but you're certainly working on that. Jeanette Owens is also going to talk about that a little bit more, along with my colleagues at Metrolink. There are other things going on in the North County that don't quite affect the Antelope Valley. There's a bus rapid transit being developed between the cities of Pasadena and Burbank. There is additional service from Los Angeles Union Station to Bob Hope Airport by way of either additional Metrolink service or some DMU service. We're working on first mile, last mile issues. I don't know if you have the scooter problem or blessing yet up here in the Antelope Valley, but Metrolink is thinking ahead and trying to develop a concept where those scooters can be parked appropriately at the transit stations so they're not tossed all around, that someone who needs one can get off the train and jump on it and get home, or conversely take it from home to the train station. It's a much larger issue in the central city. I continue to encourage anyone on the board, elected or non-elected, to give me a call. And we have a great line of communication. We've had some very, as a matter of fact, a few minutes ago, had some great discussions with Mayor Hoffbauer, Mayor McLean, and I appreciate the contact and the amicable relationship that we all have to pinpoint issues and to try and find solutions to them. Again, thank you to Supervisor Barger and Dave Perry. Dave, most of the time I'm coming to you for explanation on certain issues, and you're very good at that and highlighting what the needs are for this region. So that's my update, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for inviting me, and the work continues, and we're always fighting to get our fair share for the Antelope Valley and North cities.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Najarian or Mayor Najarian? Yes, Dave.
Thank you. Well, I'd be remiss if I did not say on behalf of the supervisor that she values her partnership with you greatly on the board. From what we've seen in the past couple of years up here with the coming together of this group, formalizing this JPA, the work that was done to set the priorities for this subregion, and the efforts that you and her have put in, we've seen a lot of success at Metro. It carries over into Metrolink as well. While you were speaking, I wrote down a few just in the last couple of years. We had the closeout of the 514 and the reprogramming of those funds. That was a huge deal for the North County. The MSP for 5 years, the multi-year sub-regional programming and those priority projects, got that through without a hitch. On Metrolink, the new Burbank North Station and the subsequent service between the airport terminal and the studies which you mentioned on the AV line, and making permanent those discounts for the fares. I mean, you've been there the whole way, so thank you for your partnership.
Thank you very much. We have a speaker on item number 6. Is that what you were?
No.
Oh. Sandra Cattell.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone, and happy Earth Day. Sandra Cattell, I'm speaking on behalf of the Sierra Club. Mr. Najarian, you hit the nail on the head here. Metrolink, Metro, everything is LA-centric. So out here, first of all, I do want to thank the efforts of everyone on this board, especially the people here from Santa Clarita, Mr. Keller, Marsha McLean, Mr. Newman, Mr. Henaway, Mr. Aguilar, Mr. Nisanti, for all of your work, and thank you all for all the work from including Catherine Barger's office, to totally revamp and spend a lot of time and energy and money on our Antelope Valley line. But I would like to talk to you also about vision. Here in Santa Clarita, we have enough of an effort using only the Antelope Valley line to get into LA. Yes, we have a little bit of bus service also to various places, but it is a hassle. I want you to start looking at the vision, maybe not today, but in the near future, that we are going to need, we have transportation needs that must be addressed, and they would include things like that 405 corridor coming north into the valley needs to come north into Santa Clarita. And I'm not talking about the freeway. I'm talking about public transportation. I'm talking about either a heavier light rail or subway or tramway or anything you want to put in there. It would be great to have it come all the way up to 126. And speaking of 126, once you get there, we have another issue, and that is the 126 corridor. We should have transportation in the near future that's going to go from Santa Clarita all the way out to Ventura. And those are two future needs that probably would be good to start addressing at this point. Thank you very much, and happy Earth Day again.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Chair, let me also mention that on the roll call, Mr. Bob Keller has joined us, and also as alternate board members, we had Dave Perry is here as the voting potential voting member without a vote today, and then we also have Mike Hanaway as well as a board alternate. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Item number 7, Metrolink North County update. Metrolink CEO Stephanie Wiggins, welcome.
Good afternoon, Mayor McLean. How are you?
Wonderful. Thank you.
I want to thank the entire NCTC for inviting me to speak today. I'm a little bit casual today because it is Earth Day. I've been in the field since 6 a.m., traveling around our system just to greet riders and thank them for trying out Metrolink, because we want to, number one, make sure people are aware that if they want to reduce their footprint, Metrolink can be an option for them. We also want to introduce Metrolink as a product for riders across the county. So it's very, very advantageous that I'm able to present to you as well today, but please forgive the format. So as I finished, I have to go back for the evening rush hour. And I will say that from this morning's rush hour and the noonday, we've seen a preliminary 20% increase in ridership as a result of offering this. So I am appreciative of this opportunity to just update you a little bit about what's going on at Metrolink. You're going to hear a more in-depth presentation from Jeanette Owens of Metro about the results, preliminary results of their study. I am new to Metrolink. I think I met you, sir, and the mayor. I've been out here a couple of times since I started this role. But I'm new to Metrolink. I've been here about 100 days on the job. Prior to that, I worked for Metro for almost 10 years, so I've known some of you through the Metro hat. But first and foremost, I'm here and chose Metrolink because I do have a regional lens. That's been my whole career, working for regional agencies. And so my goal here is to be as present and communicative in North County as I can be, because that's my commitment, not only to all of you, but also to my two bosses, Mayor Najarian and Supervisor Barger, who are also on my board. So just as a brief reminder, why are people choosing Metrolink? The number one reason people choose Metrolink is they want to avoid traffic. I had to travel here from our Pomona station location to Santa Clarita by driving and had to deal with that 514. It's horrible. People want to avoid traffic as much as possible. So we need to provide more options, as the public commenter mentioned, for North County residents. Want to remind people about the regional nature of the system. While the Antelope Valley is 100% located in LA County, the majority of our riders actually are traveling from one county to another county each and every day. And we'll talk a little bit about why people are doing that. The end-to-end travel time, though, on the Antelope Valley line is about 2 hours with all stops. That's not going to cut it. I know I'm preaching to the choir. You know, it takes too long. Even with the 514 interchange, it's still faster on average to drive than to take Metrolink. And we want to work together with Metro to improve that. So we'll talk about ways to improve that. What I wanted to share for you, though, is it's important for us to look at why North County residents are choosing MetroLink. This is an origin and destination map from a recent onboard study of our survey of our riders. We completed that survey last November. And just briefly, the darker greens, darker shade of greens, are the higher numbers of where people lived, where they cited their home origin zip code is. And then the kind of purple dots are where they're destined. And again, while Antelope Valley Line is 100% located within LA County, you see that people are traveling all throughout the region. Yes, mostly downtown LA, but also in other parts of the Southern California basin. Why is that? Continually, North County has proven to be a growing employment base. You know your numbers better than I. One of the fastest growing areas in LA County alone. The numbers you see here about some major employment centers, as well as what's growth. I noticed what we don't have on here is even Vista Canyon, which the mayor of Santa Clarita and I went and toured a month or so ago. But there's a significant number of employment centers that are actually strategically located near the Antelope Valley Line, and what we can do as part of helping be an enabler of economic development is making sure we're providing better transit options to give those employees options rather than driving alone. You also see that employment, the employment generator map also shows that with the growing employment opportunities along the Antelope Valley Line, Antelope Valley is not just a bedroom community, but it's also a destination. And we want to promote reverse commute options for employers. We also see this as one of our fastest growing lines, even by station. When we look at each MetroLink station, their boardings compared to 5 years ago, they're all trending in the up direction. Next slide. From that recent onboard survey, we can extrapolate what do Antelope Valley riders want to tell us. You know, we also aggregate all of the survey data from all of our seven lines, but what I wanted to do for today is actually extract what are Antelope Valley riders saying specifically. Well, we know that almost 70% are between the ages of 30 and 64. Their average annual household income is over $74,000 a year. Almost 70% of their trips are for work reasons. It's really important that 71% of them also have access to a car. So really, people are making the smart choice every day to leave their car at home, avoid driving, and take transit. And to my surprise, especially in this environment of telecommuting and flexible work schedules, still more than two-thirds of our riders ride 4 days a week. Next slide. So this slide just breaks down the trip purpose by station. Very interesting. Again, the majority of our riders, their trip purpose is for work. Now, the outlier there, you see the third bar from the left hand of the slide from the audience perspective. That's Sun Valley. They're an outlier, and the majority of their trips purposes are seen as other and not identified as going to work or school. But in general, people are using the system to go to work. Next slide. The age category by home station, there's some consistency there. I think the outlier mostly is Sylmar in that case. Sylmar, the majority in the age category is between 25 and 44, which is kind of an outlier from the average for the line, which is more 45 to 64, which is my age bracket, I like to say. So why are people doing this? While we know we have limited train service today, we asked SCAG to prepare a map that really looked at where the affordable housing is in terms of median housing values and where the job centers are. So what you're looking at is a map. The blue is the lesser cost housing. The yellow or the orange is the more expensive housing. And then the white kind of rectangles are where the job centers are. And when you overlay in red on that map, the Metrolink system, you see that we're connecting people to opportunity every day. People are able to afford that American dream of home ownership and also have access to a high-paying job by having Metrolink as an option. And we want to create more opportunities for folks. So with that as a backdrop, I came into the role about 3 months ago and decided that we needed to have a vision that was really more customer oriented, that we put the customer back to the heart of our operations and everything that we do. We'd lost sight of that because the focus had been on money and not the customer. And we need to focus on providing a quality customer experience. And the vision is basically based on three pillars: safety and security. It's always foundational in everything we do. We want to continue to enhance safety and security on our system and continue our role as the leader in the industry in that area. We want to have an integrated system. It's not enough just to have a train system, but we need to actually have great connections for Santa Clarita Transit and AVTA and make it seamless for people to connect to Lyft or Uber. But the first mile, last mile is critical to being able to be attractive to people to leave their cars at home. And then we want to modernize our business practices. We need to modernize our fare policies so they are aligned with the way people want to travel. We know people want Wi-Fi. We want to be more efficient in the way we operate. So you'll be seeing from us over the next few months and years while I'm in this role to really be more efficient and focused on process improvements in that role. Why do we want to do this? We want to double the ridership over the next 5 years. We think we can do it. There's more than enough people who want to get out of their cars. It's just that we need to make sure we have an attractive product for them. And for Metrolink, what that means is we've come up with a tagline of creating value and exceeding expectations. That means status quo today is not acceptable. Next slide. When we talk to Antelope Valley riders, they rate us generally as good or excellent, but we want to do more. What do they say they want? They want more service. We've talked about the two-hour travel time end-to-end that's not acceptable. They want more stations. Again, we met with City of Santa Clarita there, working on a new station. And they want reduced fares. This line was a leader of all lines in asking Metrolink to reduce the fares by 25%. That has actually paid off and more than paid for itself. So there's something to looking at our price point to making sure that's not a barrier to accessing our system. And that's part of that third pillar of the vision to modernize our business practices. And then people want to reduce stress. And I'd say in the environment of Earth Day, they also want to reduce their carbon footprint and travel green. And so we want to make sure we can provide that to riders. We've talked about safety. We were the first in the nation to implement our positive train control system, which prevents the trains from having any types of head-on collisions. It's a safety overlay. We've also provided a feature that our riders asked for just a couple of months ago, where now you can text us if you have any questions or concerns. We always had a phone number that you could call. You can also flag down the conductor on board, but people also wanted less obvious way to get their questions answered, so we've added the text feature. Next slide. Score. This is our opportunity to really increase the amount of service in time for the Olympics. Again, working with Jeanette and Metro, we want to add Antelope Valley type service, increased service on our SCORE program. It's a $10 billion program to improve headways, to get down to every 30 minutes and 15 minutes in some corridors, because people need to have a choice, but they shouldn't have to have a timetable to know when they can take the train. We think that will increase ridership, reduce greenhouse gas emissions, give us a lot of positive benefits by investing in SCORE. We had a good indication of support from the state last year. They awarded us a $1 billion grant, kind of a down payment on our SCORE program. Next slide. We talked about modernizing our business practices. Next slide. And we are working on a zero emission future. We're in the process of converting our diesel locomotives to the cleanest diesel available, which is Tier 4. We received a $300 million grant from South Coast Air Quality Management District and the state, and we're in the process of converting out those diesel polluting locomotives. Next slide. What you'll see over the next few months, we want to implement a loyalty program. We need a rewards program to reward people for using our system and provide additional amenities. We are investigating Wi-Fi on our service, a guest conductor program. I think the mayor has agreed to be one of our voiceovers on a guest conductor program. We're inviting community influencers, athletes, and celebrities to be a guest conductor and have a voice over our announcements for a four-week period. It's a way to increase brand awareness, have some fun and engagement for our riders, and also to leverage the strong networks that you all have. So with that, I'll close, and I don't know if you want me to wait until the Metro presentation, or I can take questions now.
Are there any questions from Ms. Wiggins?
If you want to look at Wi-Fi, I think your buses are doing it now. I know the AVTA buses are doing it. So, you know, there's a mechanism to do it where it's not costing you money and it's ad-based. So it's like when you walk into the airport or a lot of other places, you get the free Wi-Fi. There's a way to do it.
Wonderful. We'll follow up because that's our vision.
Anyone else? I just wanted to mention your vision for Metrolink's future is just wonderful. And on our tour, I knew that I had mentioned to you via Princesa, and we had talked about making sure that station stays open until we determine the ridership after Vista Canyon opens. But I was told that there's language in your plans on the staff level that closes via Princesa as soon as the Met Vista Canyon is open. And I'm hoping that we can address that because we absolutely need to keep it open until we know what the ridership is going to be, because it is one of the fastest growing stations for ridership now. So just a kind of a note, I'm hoping that we can get that language out of any reports that might be out there.
Sure. I'm committed to following through on what you and I discussed, and I haven't seen that language, but I'll follow up with the staff and make sure that it reflects our conversation.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And like I said, your vision is wonderful. We're here to help you in any way we can, because this is a necessity for our residents and our commuters to make sure that Metrolink grows to the way it should be growing. Any other comments or questions? Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Wiggins. Item 8, Madam Chair and board members, it's a receive and file item, but basically it's updating our membership and those in the North County about the Antelope Valley Line study. So why don't we actually, if it's okay, we will take that item now and let Jeanette Owens from Metro to go through that. And it's a combination of item 8, and we'll just put item 8 up there for now, but I think I'll go over there and put your presentation up as well, Jeanette.
Good afternoon, directors. My name is Jeanette Owens, Senior Executive Officer for Regional Rail at Metro. I have with me here, I'm going to do a couple of call-outs. I have Brian Balderrama, who is also co-presenting with me. And I also have Fanny Pan from Metro Planning, who may address any questions as well. And then I want to do a special call-out to Michelle Bame of High Speed Rail here as well, since a part of my presentation will also include some a preview of a high-speed rail readiness report that will be out for the Metro Board in May. Before I do that, before I go into the Antelope Valley Line study, I wanted to touch on, this was a last-minute add, on the Link Union Station project, which is one of the largest high-speed rail projects here in Southern California. We are in the process of the environmental report and finalizing a final EIR that we're proposing for Metro Board approval in June. And so as part of that, I'm doing a stakeholder outreach. So since this is an opportunity for me to present to the North County, I wanted to take advantage of that before I present it to the Metro Board in June. Just here, clicker. So just to give you, I'm going to try and make this really quick because I know I added this in the last minute, but the Lincoln Union Station draft EIR was released on January 7th of this year in 2019, and it included 6 shared tracks with high-speed rail, a new passenger concourse, there's 2 options, the above grade and the at grade, 7 platforms, we currently have 7 platforms today, and 10 run-through tracks over the US 101. The Link Union Station project will transform how our regional rail system operates in Southern California by providing run-through track capability. So even though we still have 7 platforms in Union Station, it will still bring about a 60% additional capacity at the rail yard with a run-through track capability, mainly because trains can now idle as less than 5 minutes as opposed to the 30 to 45 to an hour idling time at Union Station. So, for example, however way Metrolink wants to operate, but they can operate a train from Lancaster and go all the way down to San Diego with a 1-seat ride. So that is the benefits of what the Link Union Station can provide. Next slide. So we have received public comments. The public comments closed on March 7. We received approximately 634 comments. Of the 634, 75% of the comments is in regards to the above grade passenger concourse. So what we're now proposing as part of the final EIR is removing the above grade passenger concourse, removing a loop track. There was a loop track that goes up to the north along the LA River, and then removing some staging and staging that was a nuisance to the Little Tokyo area district. So we went ahead and listened to the comments that we have received and now incorporating that. So our final EIR is now moving forward with a modified at-grade passenger concourse. The same 6 shared track platform approach and up to 8 run-through tracks over the US 101 freeway. So this kind of gives you a comparison between the draft EIR project that was released on January 7th and what we're proposing to take to the board as a final EIR project. So here is the removal of the above grade passenger concourse. What we're doing is taking that expanded passageway that was with the above grade passenger concourse and just widening it up a bit to add some retail amenities and waiting areas. And here is a comparison of the 4. The expanded passageway width is approximately 180 feet. That's wall to wall. That costs approximately $2 billion. This expanded passageway will not allow for any retail or waiting areas. The expanded passageway with the above grade passenger concourse, which was released as part of the draft EIR, is approximately $2.5 billion in today's cost. Now what we're proposing to take to the board as a final EIR is a modified at-grade concourse, removing the above grade, and that cost is roughly $2.1 billion. And of course, the mega at-grade concourse, which was originally planned as part of the Union Station Master Plan as well, was roughly $3.2 billion. Next slide. So we were also able to reduce some property impacts, which was important to the Little Tokyo District area, with this with the final EIR project by removing the North Loop. Next slide. And we have received funding, or not funding, but we have received some funding, TIRCP grant as part of the Metrolink's grant award for SCORE, roughly $400 million. We have a commitment from High Speed Rail of $423 million. So our total funding commitment for Link Union Station is roughly $950 million, which will fund what we call Phase A. So the Phase A is the full run-through track capability. And so this is just a glimpse of the funding plan for Link Union Station. And this is where we are today. So we hope to send this to the board for approval of the final EIR so that we can get it certified in June of 2019. I did have a video. I don't know if we have time for a video, so we can just go straight to the next slide. The next steps for the Link Union Station is we're having a pop-up for the final EIR at Union Station on June 6th. We intend to take this to the Metro Board on June, and then we're proceeding with 35% PE design, and then we're hoping to secure high-speed rail board approval on a funding agreement for $423 million by October of 2019. So with that concludes my presentation on Link Union Station, and I'll move on to the Antelope Valley Line study unless you have any questions.
Are there any questions on this?
Our next real key is October 2019.
Yes, that is the next key, yes.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
So now I want to touch on the Antelope Valley Line study results. When we last met with the North County Transportation Coalition, we presented six scenarios to you, scenarios 1 through 6. And you have asked us to move forward with 3 of the scenarios. So if you take a look here, the 6 scenarios required 14 capital projects. By moving forward with just scenarios 1, 2, and 3, it only required 4 of the 14 capital projects. Next slide. So here are a summary of what's highlighted of the 4 capital projects. We're basically moving forward with analyzing hourly bidirectional service on the Metrolink, as well as a 30-minute bidirectional service. So the next slide sums it up. Here are the analysis results. Right now, we have 15 daily round trips with 6 train sets on the Antelope Valley Line today. By proposing 1 late night service, round trip service, I put 11 p.m. here, but there is a survey ongoing that closes tomorrow where you can vote between 10:30, 11 p.m., or 11:30. We're proposing this for a Friday and Saturday nights only. Costs for O&M is for Metro is roughly $0.5 million a year. Second is an increased hourly off-peak Metrolink frequency from Union Station to Lancaster. Because remember, on your AM and PM peak, you already have a 30 to 20-minute service between the express and the commuter rail service. So this hourly direction would increase it by an additional 2 round trips. So if you add 1 round trip on number 1, add another 2 and number 2, that would be a total of 18 round trips. So, which will require 1 additional new train set. Increasing it to a 30-minute bidirectional Metrolink frequency to Union Station, but hourly from Santa Clarita to Lancaster. And the reason that is hourly is just due to the mountainous terrain in that area, which kind of limits the number of double tracking that can occur. By 30-minute bidirectional to Santa Clarita, that would increase adding 15 new weekday round-trip services. That's including the additional round-trip to Lancaster on an hourly direction. So now I'm going to hand this over to Brian to kind of walk you a little bit more in the capital.
So as Jeanette mentioned, if we start with the Balboa double tracking project as our initial project, that will provide that 1 hourly midday service on top of the existing peak service that you have today and on top of the new late night service that would be provided. Once we go to the second round of projects, there would be an additional 3 projects in front of you, and they are in Lancaster at the end of the line at Canyon, Santa Clarita Siding, and one of the four segments of the Brighton to Roxford segment, which is the Brighton to McGinley segment for double tracking. Collectively, they would provide 30-minute bidirectional service to Santa Clarita and hourly service to Lancaster. And what those four projects do is total to that $175.2 million you see here. How do we reach that total cost? Well, one, we're selling it as a combined effort to improve capacity for the line. In order for us to double service, we would use local funds for the Measure M North County subregion of the $42 million and use that as a match as we go after federal and state programs for the remaining funds in order to deliver this overall program by 2030. In previous presentations, we've discussed with you the possible capital improvements. We didn't mention the fleet service that would be involved with improving capacity. The only reason we left that off in previous studies is Metro and Metrolink were thinking about how do we improve capacity, and they go hand in hand. We already, as Metro, have funded two additional locomotives. So in, as Jeanette mentioned, in order to get to our scenario three, we would need two additional train sets. Those two locomotive cabs have already been paid for through previous funding. And we would, it would require consensus in order to deliver the new service. So we're already rehabbing 10 additional cars that would go along with it. So the two train sets, as well as the cab cars that they would need to provide this service, we have the funding in place in order to deliver. This is a cash flow for you. Looking at those four capital projects, if we start with the initial phase, how the second phase will build on it in order to deliver a complete program by FY30. I'm going to hand it back over to Jeanette to talk to you about the high-speed rail.
So as part of our report back to the board, both Supervisor Barger and Director Najarian did a motion along for a high-speed rail readiness response. And so I'm not really going to go over that today, but I'm going to give you a preview of what we are looking at for a future high-speed rail in the Antelope Valley Line corridor. The original high-speed rail plan is on mostly dedicated alignment, which is extremely costly and at this time, funding unlikely. And so what we're looking at is more of a blended approach, and a blended approach on the AVL route that offers potential benefits to our services that we have today, the Metrolink services, and as well as new high-speed rail service. Virgin Trains is very much interested in coming into Union Station through the High Desert Corridor through Palmdale and then coming in along the Antelope Valley Line. So what we're trying to do is just try to identify some infrastructure projects that can be funded by the high-speed rail, additional funding from high-speed rail on top of the $500 million that can be used today to support the regional rail service. So if you take a look on the next slide, kind of goes through most of the infrastructure projects. We're working very closely with Metrolink. So we've identified a few. I know one is Rancho Vista Grade Separation in the city of Palmdale, all the way down including the Vista Canyon Multimodal Station. And then further down with more double tracking. What we also wanted to highlight is a lot of curves on the mountainous terrain between Santa Clarita to Lancaster needs to be realigned. Very costly, but it's something that we can look at. We can study a little bit further. but it's a way for high-speed rail to at least function or operate here on an interim basis. And the reason why I say interim basis is mainly because high-speed rail does have a statute that they have to provide a certain amount of time to come in from San Francisco to Los Angeles. So maybe on an interim basis, this is something that they can operate then. So that's something we need to work with their legislators and the governor's office to see how we can bring them here sooner or have them invest more in Southern California. I'm going to turn this back into our last slide presentation on the applied technology aspect of the Antelope Valley Line.
Question?
Yes.
You know, I'm not picking on you.
Okay.
But this is pretty much the same map we saw after the earthquake when we started this, what the needs were.
Yes.
The needs haven't changed. But what has changed is that we started out with a 90-minute travel time, and now we're over 2 hours, you know, because of various reasons. So I think we really need to focus on that, on making cost-effective improvements along that line, because Macy loves it, because it takes half the time to go downtown on a bus, you know. So I like the train, but I ride the bus because I can't get there in time. So I think we need to really take a look at that, because it's really a more effective way of moving a lot of people. But if you're taking so long to get there, people aren't going to, you're not going to get the best value for running that train.
That is one thing that Stephanie kind of mentioned earlier about. That's one thing that's one of her goals, to improve the travel time. We understand that, we added more stations. The ridership on the Antelope Valley Line has continuously increased every year after year. Adding more stations adds time, increases ridership, because people have more access to it. I know the city of Glendale, not part of this study, in a separate study, has asked us to look into adding another station right outside the Disney Center in the city of Glendale. More employment center to increase ridership and have more accessibility. So it's a catch-22, but with Stephanie's vision of reducing travel time, and express trains, that's something that we can look at to maybe provide both.
So when I ride, we're sitting on sidings a long time, and those station stops realistically are probably 2 minutes. So, I mean, it takes 15 stations to add up to an extra half hour. We haven't added 15 stations.
So to be quite honest, the infrastructure that Brian just kind of went out with, we're increasing double tracking, which also will decrease time. And if we increase the signals, that what Metrolink is looking at as well, that will also decrease time. So it's a win-win.
Yeah.
Win-win.
Okay, thank you.
So thank you for that, because that segues into the applied technology section. So within the study, we looked at applied technology. What happens if we look at switching out the fleet that Metrolink has today? If we operate on DMU, which is a diesel multiple unit or electric multiple unit, it's replacing the locomotive itself and using a powered cab car to power the rest of the train consist or train set. For a DMU, it's a 1-to-4 ratio in order to power. And for an EMU, it's a 1-to-3 ratio. Why did we look at those types of fleet conversion? Well, one, they can achieve a higher maximum speed. Even though right now we have a California limit of 79, we have to look at technology that is capable to move faster. And both of those trains, if you allow tilting capability, they will be able to handle the curves that are out on the Antelope Valley today at a much faster speed, and will, in combination, will contribute to shaving off minutes that we were looking for and rely on a day-to-day commute. How it factored into our study is the future compatibility with high-speed rail. And if we look at going from the locomotives today to maybe a DMU to eventually EMU. We're ready in the progression for high-speed rail, and at least from Palmdale to Union Station, to show that we can electrify that segment through different means. Our next steps from the AVL study, we have an open survey that closes tomorrow. So if we can get your support, we left flyers in the lobby. We're just shy of 2,000 participants right now. With your support, we'll easily get over that 2,000 mark. We're going to go through the draft study here in this Sycamore room on May 15th with any stakeholders and all of you that would like to attend. And then we're going to fold that into our ridership projections to be able to go hand in hand with our service scenarios. And all of that will, in combination, be used for our July board report, where we'll finalize and present the AVL study to our Metro board.
I just have a question regarding the survey. Is it possible to leave it on until at least the end of the week? Would that be a logistical problem? We have a city council meeting tomorrow night, and I'd love to be able to put the word out there at that meeting for people to take the survey.
Yes.
Okay, perfect.
We will extend it till Friday.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Arthur? I mean, Victor?
On the capital investment considerations, just going to come back to that. There's if funded, there's on capital investment considerations, if funded, obviously, it sounds like a high level of confidence that it will be funded. These are the initial phase and the second phase of the improvements. The funding is there, or what hurdles do you have to go through to make sure that the funding's there when you need it?
In terms of funding, if we utilize $42 million for the Measure M subregional funds, Metro and Metrolink could start filling out applications for the 2019 calendar year that fits to these capacity improvements that we're seeking, and then use those funds to just get started with the first capital project. And as that project goes from preliminary to final design, already have an approach of how our separate funding sources are going to be applied at the state or federal level, so that we can start that phase two based on the cash flow and the timeline we presented to you.
Are you saying the funding is very likely? It's there?
The funding really relies on all of you and your commitment to the program.
That kind of brings me to, I'm hoping we can have a future agenda item in the near future to discuss how we're going to get funding.
Yes. Yeah, if I could wrap this section up on the Metrolink and the part of this. On item 8 on the agenda packet, we had a receive and file item that kind of summarized everything that you heard today. I very much appreciate Director Najarian being here with his presentation. New CEO Wiggins, very much appreciate you attending today and the attention you're giving to the AVL line. And, of course, Jeanette and Brian for your work on the study to date. So the key dates that I'll just summarize with is May 15th. Brian mentioned we're having another stakeholder meeting here. Brian, what time is that scheduled for?
I believe it's 1 o'clock.
1 o'clock.
Sherry around?
No, we'll get that word out. We'll put that on the website. So that's a 1 o'clock meeting on the 15th to go through the final draft, if you will, of the study that will be presented to the Metro Board in July. So our goal is to bring a action item to this body on July 22nd prior to the Metro Board meeting. So that is our desire as staff, bring the item back for an approval item for this board to seek this project and to seek this funding from Metro and Metrolink. So July 22nd, we will have an action item.
Thank you very much. Our next report is California Highway Patrol and Sheriff's North County update. Welcome.
Good afternoon. I'd like to thank the board for allowing us an opportunity to speak. My name is Captain Ed Cruzzi. I'm the commander of the Newhall area. First, I'd like to cover what my command covers. I also have with me a lieutenant from Antelope Valley area. My area covers from the 118 freeway north, the 5, the 210, the 405, continue up the 5 up to the 138. We go out east on the 138 from the 5 to 220th west. We continue from the 5 going west. We cover the 126 to the Ventura County line. We go up the 14 freeway up to the southern end of Acton, and then we have all the unincorporated area within that general jurisdiction. So for that, I have about 65 officers to cover that span of area. During the last several years, we have seen a decrease in the number of fatal traffic collisions that we had. In 2016, we had a total of 27 fatal traffic collisions. 12 of them occurred on the county roads and 15 on the freeway. In 2017, we had a total of 20. So there was a substantial reduction in 2017. And we had 6 of those on the county roads and 14 on the freeway. In 2018, we had one increase up to 21 fatal traffic collisions. 5 of those were on the county roads and 16 were on the freeway. And thus far this year, we've had a total of 6 fatal collisions, 1 of those being on a county road and 5 on the freeway. Right now, there's substantial construction going on the 5 freeway. There's a lot of bypasses and lane striping. We have a contract with the Caltrans for deploying officers out during the construction periods to make sure we have additional enforcement, because we have very limited personnel, which will encounter drunk drivers and just various problems that the construction sites are having. So overall, we've adjusted a lot of personnel, and that's one of the reasons I believe that we saw that reduction in 2016. And we were just continue to the course, and this construction on the 5 will continue for several years, and we'll continue having officers out there during those construction periods to assist with any issues that arise during those periods. And then I'd like to turn it over to the Antelope Valley area.
Yeah, good afternoon, board. My name is Lieutenant John Castro. I'm with the Antelope Valley office up in Lancaster. I've just got a few stats from our first quarter for you to share. Like Captain Cruzzi said, we handle everything north of his Newhall area and out towards the east side up to the San Bernardino County line and the Kern County lines. First of all, I'll just give you a quick update on our first quarter stats. As an area for the Antelope Valley, we handled approximately 446 collisions just for our area alone. Within that, we've had 10 fatality collisions, 2 of which were on the freeway, and the other 8 were in county unincorporated areas. As part of that, we've just recently received grant funding to initiate additional enforcement in those areas, and we have identified approximately 10 locations that we're going to be deploying special enforcement to try to mitigate some of the fatality collisions that we have in the unincorporated areas, as well as specific highway areas on the 14 and Bouquet Canyon. And as far as one thing we wanted to bring up is that we are having a difficult time right now enforcing HOV violations in our area due to the markings on the road and the 14. Some of it has been needs to be repainted or been painted over. So it's kind of unfair to the people that are driving through that area right now to kind of enforce it when it's kind of not clearly marked. So we're trying to work with Caltrans right now. We were advised, since they removed the double yellow lines in some locations and some are not, the last update we got was a few months ago that Caltrans was waiting for the weather to get a little bit warmer. So we're hoping that this time, once they get the striping corrected, we'll be able to focus more attention on the carpool violations in that area.
There was a lot of discussion before that those lines were taken away so that people would be able to merge in and out of that lane without the double line violation, and that the signage seems pretty clear. It says that that lane, between that lane and the diamonds it's on, it's an HOV lane. So it just seems like by adding that double line in there, you just, I'm not sure which is the better ticket, the lane violation or the double line violation.
Well, I believe they removed that double line. So it's just a matter of the actual violations. But the signage just needs to be improved up there. We're still trying to enforce what we can, what are obvious violations. But as you continue further south on the 14, you see that it's clearly marked in certain areas. It's
and the lines can back up. Down.
Exactly. So up in our area, it just needs to be restriped, repainted, so it's clearly visible to everybody. So there's no question. Yeah, it's supposed to be coming back, but they're not there yet. The last thing that we wanted to bring up is, again, we are a smaller area than the Newhall area. We have approximately 40 officers that work in our office. We handle a very large area with about 36 officers that are currently working patrol. So just keep that in mind. We do our best. We try to be out there in visible patrol, in-view patrol as much as possible. And do you have any questions?
Are there any questions? Victor?
Yes, my question is for the captain. Well, first of all, thank you for what you did to keep our roads safe. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you.
I've been hearing a lot, reading a lot about fatalities on 138 Western segment connection to 5. What do you see? Is the trend better, worse, the same? And what do you see? What do you think is needed up there to improve the situation?
And sorry, what portion of the 138, the west near the 5?
So yeah, what we're seeing is on the 138 anywhere between from the 5 over to 245th Street, and also at 150th Street.
So it's kind of split.
Yeah,
it's going to be both of us.
Yes,
so I'll have
yeah.
to look at our records okay. to give you accurate stats on
yeah,
that.
We have perhaps for the July 22nd meeting we could have a little more of a focus on that. I know there's some people here today in attendance that will speak on item 11 from the public that want to talk about safety on this segment of North SR 138. So that would be helpful.
That's basically like the extension of Avenue B.
And I'm just looking through real quick to see if I see anything on the 138. I have all our stats for the last several years. So it looks like just on the last couple of years, there's been about one fatality per year up off the 138. And I was up there on a ride-along with one of our officers probably, it all blends together now, but probably 6-8 months ago. And part of the issue is really high speeds. We have had some issues. The Santa Clarita Court, all our traffic citations now go down to Chatsworth, and we are having some issues with differing opinions if a survey is required for that area. Based on the vehicle code, it's not, but we're having some issues with that in court right now, so we're trying to address that as well. But there are some substantial speeds out there. In the ride along, we had a couple hundred mile an hour speeds, and it's a 55 zone. So they get moving very fast out there. Part of that is also with only 65 officers, and we have about 48 that are actually working patrol. That, you know, that's 15 per shift, and then you have days off and everything else. So it really starts to dwindle down the personnel we have. In the last 5 years, I've lost about 14 officers.
Right.
So I've unfortunately the resources that I have been diminished, and we've been trying to. Be creative on how we deploy our personnel. So where you have, for example, we have a list of areas we want to hit every month, but we want to randomize it. So you go around the corner, is there going to be an officer there or not? Don't know. We don't want you to know either. So you go around the corner. If we're not there, hopefully you're going the speed limit. If we are, hopefully you're still going the speed limit. We don't get any money from citations that we write. Our ultimate goal is just to make sure we reduce the injuries and deaths on the highway.
Great. Thank you very, very much. Now we have a report from our sheriff's North County update, please.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I'm Sergeant Scott Shoemaker from the Santa Cruz Sheriff Station's Traffic Office. In a late 2015 to early 2016, we began working very closely with the city in a three-tiered program to reduce our traffic collisions, injuries, and fatalities. My end of it is through the enforcement side of it. The city traffic engineers work with us if they see design flaws or roadways that can be changed to improve traffic flow and reduce risk to drivers and pedestrians. In that time, the city has increased our motor fleet, our motor deputies, from two officers or two motor deputies to now we have 7 motor deputies and a motor sergeant. Our citations during that time have gone up tremendously. Last year, our traffic collisions came down approximately 13% from the previous year, and from 2016 to 2017, from 17 to 16, our collisions had gone down approximately 11 to 12%. The city also, working with us, we've done a education program where they're pushing out things through social media, PSAs in the movie theaters and online, billboards, things like that. And then our office, PIO from our station, is also pushing out the PSAs and educational items, along with putting out our statistics and if information on DUI arrests or DUIs, consequences, and some of the interesting or information on some of our DUIs, the arrests that are being made. In 2016, we wrote, or 2015, excuse me, our station wrote approximately 11,400 citations. Last year, we were about 18,600 citations. We're trying to target specific areas where we know we have high speeds or we have high collision rates, and our motors will specifically work in those areas the majority of their shifts, and then they'll go out to other locations where we get requests for enforcement in those areas or in the residential areas or school zones and things like that.
Are there any questions? Great. Thank you. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Detective Kemwell. I'm over at Palmdale Sheriff's. I'm an investigator there at the station. I've been there for about 5 years. I just wanted to update the board on our current numbers as of March of this year. Last year, we finished with a total of 18 fatalities in the city of Palmdale. This year, we're currently at a total of 3 up until March. Of those 3, 1 was due to speed, 1 was due to poor lighting conditions on Sierra Highway between Avenue N Nora and Avenue M Mary. So I believe that collision was due to lighting. And then we also had another one most recently last Thursday, which was possibly DUI related. So we're currently waiting for tox results for prosecution of that driver. Currently, we are at 1,500 citations issued for the year. We are currently in the process of putting together another street racing enforcement in the city of Palmdale. Last year, we conducted a street racing enforcement where we put together a team of deputies along with the highway patrol from downtown and the Glendale area, and we were able to issue a total of 36 citations in a 3-hour period and 2 arrests for reckless driving and also the tow of those vehicles due to the reckless driving. So with the stats of that operation was very effective, we're hoping to produce another operation here in the near future in the city of Palmdale, because obviously we have a problem with the younger drivers and the meetups at the car hop that we're trying to address, and we're also trying to educate at the same time while we're out there enforcing it. Currently, we have a few DUI saturations that are going on weekly, and we also have a couple grants that we're currently operating on for clicker ticket and also cell phone violations. The last cell phone violation operation that we conducted, I believe 75 citations were issued by three deputies in an 8-hour period. So those stats are very high for the cell phone violations, which also in turn becomes a distracted driver, which also may be one of the causes of some of these collisions. So along with education, we're hoping that those citations or issuance of citations would bring the education to those drivers. Thank you.
How many more do you
have? We currently have four, sir.
Four plus Cucker?
Correct.
Thanks.
Any questions? Thank you. Thank you very much. Our next item is item number 10. And would you like to take that?
Yeah, and just to remind the board, we do not have a quorum to take any action on any item, but we could have a
correct.
Thank you.
All right, so for discussion purposes only, since this item was brought up, we've had some thoughtful discussion with the other members that are affected. I had a lengthy discussion. I want to thank Ara Najarian and Mayor McLean here for their input. I also had quite a bit of discussion with other people such as Supervisor Barger and John down at the San Fernando Valley COG. So at this point, what I'd like to do is, as a number of issues have come to light as a result of these discussions, and I would, although we can't take action on it, I would like to encourage our member agencies to send a letter to SCAG, and I will hand carry them if necessary, to request that the item be tabled to allow further analysis and impact discussions to occur. Nothing's going to happen real quick here, so we got another year. We can look at this until the next General Assembly. So that would be my recommendation. Although we can't take action on it, I would like to ask the Supervisor's Office, Santa Clarita, and our members if they could do that, and I think that would facilitate the future discussions and relationships. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Director Hoffbauer.
Our next item is item number 11, Caltrans Highway Project Updates. Osama Bikmagala.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Osama Migala. I am from Caltrans District 7, Los Angeles and Ventura County Project Management Office. I'll start my presentation with the table at the bottom middle of the page. This is Route 14 projects. Project number 7, 8, and 9, these are projects that are state-funded. Funding comes from State Highway Operation and Protection Program, which is the SHOP program. Project number 7, this is the pavement rehab job from Avenue P8 to the county line. We just finished the project approval and environmental document, and it's going to be proceeding to design very soon. And we expect to finish construction by fall of 2023. Project number 8, which is Placerita Canyon to Golden Valley Road. It's also slope repair because we have seen falling rocks and slope is some collapsing of slopes. And we are in the project approval environmental document phase. We expect to move to design in next fiscal year, and we're going to be complete done with construction in spring of 2024. Project number 9 on the list. This is also it's a slope repair project from Newhall Avenue to Placerita Canyon Road. Also, we are completing the project approval environmental document phase. We'll move to design also next fiscal year. We expect to be done by construction in fall of 2024. This concludes the Route 14 projects. Any questions on those projects? Okay, I'll move on to Route 138. Look at the table at the top right-hand corner of the page. I'll be reporting on the green and the orange projects. All the blue that you see here, these are completed projects that we completed recently. I start with the combined projects 15 and 16. This is a combined segment 3 and 4. It received funding in the 2018 STEP program. STEP program means this is a state transportation improvement program. And in collaborative work with Metro, we got it funded last year, and we now are starting the design. We are at the survey phase of the project. Project next to that is project number 18. This is the segment 6, which is the widening of 138 between the 87th Street to 96th Street. We are widening from 2 to 4 lanes and median turning lanes. We just had the construction contract approved on the 5th of this month, April 5th. And you're going to see some construction equipment very, very soon. And we expect to go to complete construction by fall of 2021. Project next to that, this is a project. We call it combined segments 8 and 9. Also, it's widening project. This project, we started the construction last summer, and we expect to complete construction by summer of 2020. Next project to report on, it's a green project number 25. This is the segment 13 widening of 138 from 185th Street to State Route 18 Junction. And we are resuming design after it was shelved for quite some time due to lack of funding. So we will resume design as early as this July. And we expect to finish design by 21-22 fiscal year. And we expect to finish construction by winter of 2025. The orange project number 29 here, it's a shop project, state funded. This is a pavement preservation. We are finishing this project very soon. We just did some, we are adding on some ADA curb ramps. Once they are completed, we're gonna declare this project construction completed. And we expect to do so very, very soon, early summer of this year. And the last project to report on is project number 30. This project, we were considering funding, but due to change of priorities, we're going to be looking into funding it in the next job cycle. And of course, the winter 2024 date may move a little bit. This concludes my presentation. Any question?
Excuse me, we have you put in a speaker card? Would you kindly do that? We have 3 other speakers who'd like to speak as well. And then you can have your turn. And then we can get any questions answered at that time. Thank you. Thank you.
Just a reminder for the speakers, it's a 3-minute time limit per speaker. And I'll keep the clock over here.
Great, thank you. Our first speaker will be, yes, please. Thank you. Jeff Zimmerman, to be followed by Denise Shippey, to be followed by Betty Williams. Yes.
Thank you for having. Can we get going? Thank you for having me. Jeff Zimmerman from rural Nenac. I represent the Oso Town Council. We have population about 850. Today, I just want to talk to you briefly about the accidents on Highway 138, the high speed that's been involved, serious passenger space intrusion, fatalities, and serious bodily injuries up along the 138 and the 5. I know you addressed the California Highway Patrol officer regarding those issues. However, we wanted to bring some of the pictures forth to you today so you can examine the bodily injury, the deaths that we've had along the 138. I was pleasantly surprised to receive the report on Highway 138 improvements. Our last meeting, we met with Metro and our representatives from California Highway Patrol as to what the Town Council, Metro, the Board of Supervisors, CHP can all do to improve highway safety along the 138. And we're referring to from the 14 freeway to Interstate 5 to the west. We're especially concerned about the intersections at 60th Street West, 90th Street West, 110th Street West, 150th Street West, all the way to 240th, 245th, Three Points Road, and out to 300th Street, where we've had most of our major injury accidents. We asked our Metro representatives, what can we do after the scoping meetings? We all took place to the scoping meetings back in 2014. We hadn't heard back from Metro. So 2019's here. We asked Metro for some funding. They were pleasant. Very helpful with us, along with Highway Patrol, asking for increased patrol. And today I was handed a report that was funded back in 2017 regarding early phasing improvement programs. And we are asking, as a town council representing Nenac and the Fairmont areas, for funding for that. Our request was originally to the 5th District Supervisor for approximately $50 million for immediate relief on highway safety accidents. The early phasing report suggests about $49 million. We figured, 15-20% overrun, you're probably looking at approximately $70 million for those highway safety improvements, especially left turn lanes, right turn lanes, passing lanes. At least three passing lanes are needed due to high truck traffic and the speed. Our other concern is trying to get that speed to slow down from the Interstate 5 corridor, especially to the 138 corridor around Quail Lake. Those speeds are 80 to 90 miles an hour on a daily basis out there. We've asked for CHP for increased patrol, and the result of high-speed accidents are cars torn in half, people ejected onto the highway, fatality injuries, and serious gross bodily injuries. So at the conclusion of our town council meeting, it was heartbreaking. Denise Shippey, who is here, she'll be the next speaker. Back in October of 11th of 2018, about 7 o'clock in the evening, Mr. Appleby was on his motorcycle at 245th Street West, right at the California Aqueduct, returning from our local store.
Mr. Zimmerman, I have to ask you to wrap up your...
Yeah, let me wrap up for 2 seconds. He was killed and struck and killed on our highway. Denise is going to describe what happened to Mr. Appleby and the resulting accident. And with that, we would appreciate your concerns for the funding for the early phasing improvement plan for the Nenac and the Fairmont area. So if I can, Denise?
Be happy to call it.
Thank you.
Shippey,
thank you.
Hello. Thank you for having me. My name is Denise Shippey. I just want to tell you how hard it is to have to find out that someone that you really, really care about just got killed. It's not fun. It's not something that I recommend to anybody, for sure. But I had to go through it. And that's the gentleman right there, Mr. Zimmerman. He's the one that had to tell me about it. And he's my neighbor. And that makes it just that much harder, I imagine, for him. but the problem is real. It really is real out there. Speeding is a big problem out there. And the woman that killed him was speeding. And she was passing, just passing through. She was just on her way through. Well, Mr. Appleby was not on his way through. He was on his way home from the store. We don't have any other road. We have no other alternative. We only have the 138. That's the only way we have as the community, as the locals, to get from one place to another. And we are forced and faced with all of the people that are just passing through, flying through. The people that we are losing are our neighbors and our family, our friends and our loved ones. And it's happening way too often. It happened to me, and it happened real fast. I just wasn't expecting it to happen. Expect the unexpected, I guess, but it's been very difficult because I have to go by that place every day and I can't go any other road. It's the only one I have. We really need help. We need help making our only road safer. That's all I can say.
Thank you. I know that's got to be really hard for you. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Our next speaker is Betty Williams, and then Wayne Sapp.
Thank you. My name's Betty Williams. I live out in Enoch.
You can put the microphone closer, please. Thank you.
April 16th, 2005, I was driving home from work, and we had a wonderful poppy year. And along around 300th Street, there were just a whole lot of cars, a whole lot of people everywhere. And I slowed down and came up on a car. There were two young ladies standing in the car. We made eye contact. And I started looking further down the road. And this 12-year-old girl forgot her camera. And she yelled, "I gotta get my camera." And her sister, who knew I was right there, yelled at her not to. And I was already focusing down the road. And out of the corner of my eye, I could see her hit my windshield. And I just started screaming till I pulled over. She died that night. And there was nobody speeding. There was just no place for either one of us to go. Thank you. And it impacts your life for the rest of your life. You know, her family, Cassie's family, has moved out of the area. And I've been in therapy for 14 years. And I hardly ever drive, especially now. And it's just so dangerous. You have all these slight hills that nobody knows you're coming. Nobody sees you. There was no place for me to pull over. There was no place for her really to get out and look at poppies and all that. And it was nobody's fault. But it's just such a dangerous road.
Yes. Thank you so much for coming and sharing your story. I know that the supervisor is very well aware of some of the improvements that need to be made. And all it takes is money, and this is something that we have been struggling with for quite some time. So all I can say is just thank you so much for coming and sharing your story, and I hope that through these stories we can make a difference in the safety on our roads.
I hope we really need help out there. It's my husband and I came home from work 2 days ago, and we saw this woman pass a truck and almost took the highway patrol off the road, and I don't know why he didn't turn around and go after her, because half a mile down the road she did it again and ran two people off the road.
Well, you know, that is happening, and if we don't get our drivers to understand what they're doing, that's really too sad. Once again, thank you so much. Appreciate your coming. Our next speaker is Wayne Sapp.
Hello, my name is Wayne Silas, and I live out in Nenak, and I've been out there for 20 years. And this question is addressed to the gentleman from Caltrans. I don't know where he went.
Yes, would you direct it to us, and then we'll ask him to come up, okay?
Okay, he mentioned something about highway improvements on the west side of Highway 138 in the West Antelope Valley. He said it would be about 5 years, and he put it in segments. So I've been hearing everything for the last 14 years about the Tejon Ranch development and Highway 138, and I used to go to the pancake breakfasts at Tejon Ranch. And I know it's been delayed for the last 14 years, the Centennial Improvement, the homes that are going to be built there. But what I'm hearing is the highway has to be built first before the homes can be built. So I just want some input on that.
Okay, if that's your question, if you don't mind taking your seat, we'll ask him to come up and answer your question. He's still here, right?
Yeah, do you want to finish the speakers? Who else do we have?
That was the last of our speakers. Oh, could you kindly come up? Did you hear the question?
I think it has to do with the segment 27 from the 14 out to the 5. And what needs to be done to get that work going along there?
Well, based on the recent accidents, our traffic team is working with CHP in collaboration to, based on the accident reports, to see what could be done to improve on those particular locations. As for widening, like project number 27, we had an environmental study that was concluded in June of 2017. And so far we don't have funding for the project to proceed forward.
What safety stuff, I think, is what they're asking. What other safety measures in the interim can be done?
Well, our traffic team or traffic safety team is looking into it right now as we speak, and we'll come up with recommendations The very next probably board meeting, we could come back and brief you on what we have done so far.
Okay.
Do you post status and some of the things that you're doing to address some of these issues on your website? I mean, people need to see what's happening, and if you are addressing these issues, I think it would be really great if we could reference your website and ask them to go there and to be able to take a look and see what progress you're making, because I know you're continuously working on these things.
Sure. It's a great idea. We'll look into it, Madam Chair, and we'll get in touch with the board very soon.
That's great. And if you could kind of let us know at the next meeting what you have been able to post. And
sure.
Great. Sure. And can they go to your website and make comments on these areas as well?
Yeah, I think you can. Yeah, we'll make it possible.
Okay, that would be great.
Sure.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay. Is there I know that one of the things they did on Angeles Forest Highway when it was particularly bad, they posted a sign there, and it would say, so many collisions so far this year, so many fatalities so far this year. And I don't know if they listed citations. That might be a motivator for people to slow down. But is there any possibility, when CHP was talking about education, I've got to believe that somebody doing 90 miles an hour out that road is not thinking, I could kill somebody in the next quarter mile. Has that been thought about? I mean, we got signs about everything else along these roads. How about telling people, here's how many people have died because of people's stupidity?
I'm not sure how to formulate this, but we could look into alternatives. I think increasing enforcement would be probably a good solution for this. But again, we'll be working with CHP and finding the best ways to handle this kind of situations.
Maybe you can get some businesses along that corridor to start posting some signs.
I don't sign that.
No. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 more items to get through, and not a lot of time to get to. Thank you. To get through them. So I'm just wondering if there's a way for when you come up to give your report, kind of condense it as much as possible. It would be really appreciated. Just kind of what's new. Okay, we have item number 12, Metro Highways Project Updates.
Good afternoon.
Condensed version.
Yes. Isidro Panuco here for the Highway Program. I'll just touch on briefly the project that was just being discussed. So in 2016, Metro completed the EIRAS environmental phase for the 138 between 5 and 14. As has been discussed already, there's no funding for the next phases of the development. So some resources to use in the future would be Measure M or other locally controlled funding for safety projects or capacity enhancements. Going back to the first project I have on the list is I-5 HOV lanes. So we're currently in design, hoping to complete that in May of 2019 this year, so very soon. The third project I have on that list is the 138 SR-14 overlap. This is the 10 interchange projects. We manage grants with the local jurisdictions of Lancaster and Palmdale to move those projects along. The fourth project on that list is the High Desert Corridor project. As many of you know, it's a very costly project in the $10 billion range. We're currently evaluating options on 138, so south of the proposed High Desert Corridor, to develop highway capacity projects from SR-14 to the 15 of San Bernardino County. And the last one, again, just in the knowing time is short, is we're working with the NCTC staff, local jurisdictions for Palmdale, Lancaster, and Caltrans to develop SR-14 improvement projects. But one of the things that I'd caution you is as we go forward on these, there's going to be a lot more need than there are resources. So we have to be a little diligent on how we invest those for all the shortfalls in future projects that may come up.
Okay, great. Any questions, comments? Victor.
The I-5 project, the next phase of it, the carpool lanes, et cetera. I assume we're on time. Last I heard, the Metro's actually going to take over the project, and understand the design will be ready in a month or so.
That's still on schedule, so we need some final approvals from Caltrans to get that done, but if that all goes well, if they're willing to move that along with us, we'll be done by May.
Great. Thank you very much. Next, California High Speed Rail Update, Michelle Baim. The condensed version.
Can you go ahead and, can you leave it right here? So there's been a lot of discussion about the California High Speed Rail project over the last several months with Governor Newsom coming into the state of California. And I think it's really important to take a look at the map that's on this slide. The state of California still continues to intend to build 800 miles of all-electric high-speed rail for the state of California. What's been said is that it's difficult and it might take a little bit longer than what we've looked at in the past, but this is still the state's objective, because at the end of the day, what we're doing is we're building a high-capacity, electric-based transportation corridor to move people back and forth across the state of California, and that meets a lot of our mid and long-term goals. And so we do continue to work towards this goal. At the project level, it's very difficult. As we know, we've had a lot of discussions about where the route would actually go at the project level, but programmatically, this investment is something that the state of California continues to look at. I think that there are opportunities for us to take a look at how you build from small to big, not just start at big, and try to go from that perspective, and that is what the agency will be looking at. How do we make investments in specific things that result in immediate improvements to the existing systems that when you add them all up, become the high-speed rail project? And I think that was the nature of some of the discussions that were had earlier today by some of our transportation partners. So I will leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions, comments? Thank you very much. I'm assuming this next item we would table until the next meeting?
Yeah, so item 14 will be tabled until the July 22nd meeting, yes.
Great, thank you. Item 15, High Desert Corridor Project Update, Josh Candelaria.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. I'll be really brief. I'll just kind of organize my comments real briefly, kind of my role specifically in the High Desert Corridor, to the recent actions, I think, determined by the JPA, and then potentially next steps. So just for context purposes, I'm kind of the interim staff for the JPA. I was brought in specifically just to reassess the organization, engage the stakeholders, and specifically facilitate a conversation about next steps. Secondly, we just had a brief workshop last year with the JPA with a number of stakeholders to really articulate, I think, the next steps for the JPA. At that meeting, the common theme with all the stakeholders was east-west mobility is important. The JPA, I think, recommitted to the project. They also prioritized the rail, and then specifically, as you heard from Metro staff, in the interim, the two transportation agencies are looking at the 138-18 improvements. As a result of that, the board made a couple different policy decisions subsequent to that workshop. This was prior to the discussion of Brightline coming on, specifically for the acquisition of the Las Vegas to Victorville route. The board did a few things. They went ahead and prioritized the record of decision, which is the next step or the prerequisite to doing right-of-way acquisition. I think we all recognize that there's a funding shortfall for a project like this, specifically within the county of San Bernardino's portion. Two, they want to go ahead and kind of direct staff to identify some potential funding to offset that. And three, they became, I think, the local sponsor for the private activity bonds. So in the next 6 months, that's going to kind of be the primary focus for the JPA, really looking at identifying some funding. I think we have some funding available that's going to be coming on the federal side. And two, I think really looking to attract some additional private investment. So I'll be more happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions, comments? Thank you very much.
In the interest of time, we could just, on item 16, I'll just suggest that the projects before you were approved by the Metro Board in February. The member agencies are moving forward on their funding agreements with Metro, and it was a very good partnership and working relationship between all your member agencies, your staffs, and Metro, so really do appreciate that, and we'll just deal with that at the next meeting. But right now, the goal is to get the funding agreements with Metro executed.
Great. Any questions on item number 16 or comments? Very good. Measure 17, Eva Pan Moon from Metro.
Hi, thank you very much. I'm going to make this fast. We were going to ask for a 15-minute slot, but we will go like 10 minutes. He flew in, Bill, one of our consultants, flew in from Oakland, so I'm going to give him time. Just quickly, can we go to the next slide? This is called the Measure Up Program. also known as the Arturo Performance Measurement Pilot Program. We're updating you with what kind of extension we're having. Before I go on and tell you what we have today and what we're working on, I want to update you briefly on one component of our program. We have a countywide Arturo Performance Measurement Baseline Conditions Analysis that is consisting of about 8 workbooks showing you the baseline of your subregion. They're broken out of your subregions. They show you speed, travel time, and volume. We're currently updating that with 2018 data for our partner city agencies to use, as well as Metro. Secondly, what we're here for today is called the Arturo Performance Measurement Pilots. It is a countywide tool that is now available, and that's what we're going to present on today. Next slide, please. Basically, it is to be used to assess mobility performance measures on Arturo corridors. Secondly, it's also to support local agencies and sub-regional and operational planning. And this is something that we hope that everyone can use to make data-driven decision-making. We realize a lot of times we do not make data-driven decision-making because we do not have data available. So we are making data available now. Right here on the right side of the screen is 8 performance measures that we've done a stakeholder outreach to build on. This took about a year to figure out what performance measures our cities are looking for. These are the 8 that we decided on, and we are making that available in what we called IPEMS. Next slide, please. So what is IPEMS? It is an online roadway performance monitoring tool for the freeways and arterials. It has data, performance measures, what I mentioned earlier, such as travel time speed, travel time reliability, and so forth. Route congestion, map animations. It'll also give you reports, charts, and exports to your familiar Word document, Excel, or PDF. It uses HEAR data, which is real-time crowdsourcing data. Before this extension, we only had this available to historical data, just in the San Gabriel Valley region. We've opened up to the county, the entire county, because we realize this is very useful for our agencies. So this is real-time, continuous speed data, link by link. And we also incorporated volume counts, that volume that we've collected over the couple of years. That's over 200 arterial corridors taken in 17 and 18, and what we collected from the local agencies. And I'm going to turn it over to Bill, who's fluent from Oakland, so don't cut him off yet.
No, thank you. And we're not going to do a live demo, as it says on the agenda packet. But quickly, IPEMS is a very powerful tool to do arterial performance analysis. Our ability to do arterial performance analyses on freeways goes back, with using real-time or near-time data, goes back 20-some-odd years. Now we have the ability to do that for arterials. I encourage everyone to sign up or have staff sign up on the website. It's no cost. If you have a .gov behind your name, your account will be approved immediately. It may take a little bit of time if you don't have a .gov behind your name, but I encourage everyone to sign up for the tool. Just like a Google Maps allows you to pan and zoom around and look at our performance on roadways, freeways, and arterials, but unlike Google Maps, it allows you to dive in and look at historical data, historical trends on arterials as well as freeways. You can go on to the next slide. You can look at link level data, or you can create your own routes and corridors that meet your needs. Say you want to do a signal timing study. You can create a corridor in there, and within a few minutes, IPEMS will generate historical data, and you can do any number of analyses on that corridor. Eva pointed out earlier there are a lot of performance measures beyond speed and travel time, but things that are really important to traffic engineers and planners are in there as well. You can go to the next slide. The example I was going to point out was on looking at travel times on, I believe this is Bouquet Canyon Road, Newhall Railroad corridor that I developed last week. You see, it's pretty, the travel time on here is pretty stable. I would call this a pretty reliable arterial corridor in terms of travel time. However, on this allows you to see extreme days, like special events or incidents. And on January 23rd, there was a major incident. So go to the next slide, please. This just tells you that you can go and do different types of analyses. But let's, the plot here that I'm going to show you, the next slide. It's very useful to traffic engineers, and it's, but it shows you speeds and by time of day. The x-axis is time of day. The y-axis is the distance along the corridor that I had developed, and you can develop your own corridors. If it's green, it's going close to free flow. If it's red, it's really bad. And you can see on this day right here at Soledad Canyon Road and Bouquet Canyon Road, there was a major backup starting around 3 o'clock, and it lasted till 8 o'clock. Where you see all that red and yellow, that's where the accident occurred. Through a tool like this, you can look and see, you know, how bad it was, where it occurred, and you can see how long the queue is, how long the backup is on that particular day. So what happened on that day? Unfortunately, and we've had a series of people talking today about accidents, and unfortunately there was a fatal collision on SR-14 on January 23rd in the afternoon, and it created, caused people to divert. And one of the diversions, I believe, in looking at the data here, but not really knowing the area, is that Bouquet Canyon Road backed up as people were diverting to avoid the incident location. PIMS allows you to look at, IPIMS allows you to look at bottleneck locations where incidents are recurring, regular traffic congestion occurs, but it also allows you to see where people are diverting onto your arterials. So to help you make better data-driven decisions about what to do with traffic congestion. There are a number of detailed reports. I won't go into them, but I will say that unlike other tools, this allows you to do delay costs. Actually, you can quantify and monetize the cost of traffic congestion and wasted fuel due to congestion on your arterials. And then you can jump right to the last slide. The next slide's the last one. It just allows you to develop a state of the system report for your arterials, which I don't believe people have been able to do in real or near time in the past. You can prioritize projects such as signal timing projects. You can see where we know of one city that wants to look at the 4th of July parade to see how traffic diverts around that on the 4th of July. So you can do any number of things with this tool. And I also want to point out Vigen Davidian from ITERIS there, the wizard behind the box here. He's here with us today as well, and we'll happily answer any questions that you have, even given the limited time. But thank you very much.
Just to quickly add one more thing. We are doing a stakeholder outreach, and we're offering one-on-one FaceTime with any of your staff in the cities who want to learn how to use IPEMS. In the next slide, we'll have our contact names on there. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Okay, great. Thank you. The next item, we can't deal with it, can we?
No. It'll be moved over to the July meeting, and the current officers will stay in place.
Okay. Now we have 19 Michael Turner and Rafi Hamparian. Can you do it in 30 seconds?
No. Sure. I have one bill to bring up to you, piece of state legislation. It's SB 152. This would shift the active transportation program from primarily a state-driven program to mostly a local program. And while that might seem tempting, we're usually in favor of such a thing. The allocation of those monies to the locals might not end up with as much money in the county as we would expect. We think we overall compete much better at the state for active transportation funds because of the concentration of disadvantaged communities in our region, and allocating the money down by population actually does not do well for Los Angeles County. So we are opposing the bill. I've sent some information to Art, who can that has our board report and our letter. If you're concerned about the bill, want more information, want to get involved, have your staff email me, contact me, turnerm@metro.net. A little more than 30 seconds.
Thank you, Michael. Members of the coalition, very quickly on the federal front, five quick issues. Number one, we continue to advance our Rebuilding America initiative. One of the key parts of that initiative is for renewing the projects of national regional significance, which is a big grant program, not at the $20 to $25 million level. And so we're hoping to revive that with the new reauthorization bill. That's number one. Number two, with respect to Congress and consideration of an infrastructure package, there's really a tale of two houses. The House of Representatives is working on a dynamic, large infrastructure package, and the Senate is saying not so much, and they're working on a regular reauthorization bill. So how that gets reconciled between the two bodies is really anybody's guess, but as of now, as I'm speaking to you, the two houses are doing two very different things. House working on a dramatic DeFazio-led infrastructure package. The Senate, with Mr. Barrasso from Wyoming, working on a regular order authorization bill. With respect to grants, there's two big grant programs out there. One is the Build Grant Program, used to be the Tiger Program. That was just announced by the USDOT. Applications are due in the next couple of months, expected to be announced at the end of the year. Maximum grant is $25 million. No state can get more than 10% of the total, which is $900 million. And the last thing I'd say is, unlike last year, where a majority of the money, about 67%, went to rural areas, Congress now has put a 50-50 split. So 50 urban, 50 rural. The second grant program, and then I'll have one more item and wrap up, is the Infra Grant Program. This is the program that delivered about $50 million for the I-5 last year. Metro has submitted for two projects, the 5760 and the I-105 Express Lanes project. Lastly, on local hire, this is something that Metro has worked on for a number of years. We are working to permit our agency and other local agencies to hire locally when using federal dollars. There was a pilot program under the previous administration. The current administration eliminated that, and we're working with the current administration and both the House and the Senate to reprise that, because we think that's good policy to allow California agencies that are putting up 80, 90, 95% of the money on projects to hire whom they'd like for building those projects. And with that, concludes my remarks. If there are any questions, comments, I'd be happy to field them.
Very good. That was a lot of information. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Okay. The next item, number 20, is NCTC Board Member Future Agenda Items.
The only thing is, I'd just like Metro and the county to look at. I see a lot of these ADA projects being pushed out, and those are the things that we get sued over. So I think we really need to take a look at, is there other sources we can find to fix some of these ADA projects? So if you could take a look at those, some of those look like they're pushed out a number of years. And I know that we work with our transit agency to try to find some of those solutions as well. But that's a real problem for the people that are mobility impacted here.
Okay. Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank
Anything
you.
Else? Victor?
Two things we're talking about, at least Chamber of Commerce level. One, there are a lot of projects out there that come to be, and Metro is dealing very well with it, making progress. The idea of staffing the companies that are going to be building those projects, where they're going to get the hires, how they're going to train them, and so on. So that's one thing. The other thing is, it seems the confluence of housing policy and transportation, specific bill, I've got the number offhand.
SB.
Thank you. For example, that may affect our ability to kind of housing that gets built, where it gets built, and so on. So in any event, those two issues might come up, and so we might want to look at.
Okay. Thank you very much. Are there any further public comments? Any other comments from the board? Thank you. We are adjourned.
Thank you.